Yo, yo, what's happening? We made it to Thursday. We're still walking and talking. State is still here, barely. The Plunders have left a little of it around. And they have left themselves dazed and confused. It's a wonderful thing to see the Plunderers fail as miserably as they have and to learn about how inept they are with the collapse of tolls. But if you listen to them talk about, first of all, you remember how happy Ned was doing his State of the State address the other day. You remember that? How just filled with excitement he was. How he had this sense of himself as this transformational character who could just stand up there and inspire everybody to feel good about the state. And if they felt good about the state because they heard Jolly Ned talk about it, then automatically everybody would want another $1 billion in taxes in the form of tolls. Somehow, this is how he looks at life.
The rest of our country is looking at Connecticut in a new light. So should you.
But I suppose if you're born super rich,
Optimism is contagious.
It gives you a different attitude. It does make you feel like all you have to do is decide to be optimistic.
Optimism is contagious. Make a difference.
Why does he think he has to say things twice, though? Where did that one come from? Or three times even.
You've got a bill. You know what you want to do. You want to take it from the rainy day fund. You want to do tractor trailers. But don't say, I can't make up my mind. I need another week. I need another week. I need another week. I've heard that for a year. And I've lost patience. We're going to fix our transportation plan and are ready to work with anybody who has a constructive alternative.
All right. So Ned hates the Democrats who run the legislature. That is the Speaker of the Tolls over in the House side. And the president of the Senate, on the Democratic side of the Senate, Martin Looney. There's a lot of contempt here.
But don't say, I can't make up my mind, I need another week, I need another week, I need another week. I've heard that for a year. And I've lost patience. We're going to fix our transportation plan and are ready to work with anybody who has a constructive alternative.
This is just remarkable. I'm going to repeat myself from yesterday, but it was a different time of day, so maybe it won't be so repetitive for you. This was the governor announcing at 4 o'clock yesterday that he was through pursuing tolls. Why are tolls done? Because they don't have the votes. They can't get 18 Democrats in the state to vote against tolls. They can't find 18 who will do it. And because of that, obviously, they didn't have a vote because the party in control doesn't have a vote on something it's going to lose. It doesn't want to cost its representatives the political capital of having to vote for something and then be blamed for having voted for it when it's not going to be a law, when it's not going to pass. So anyway, Ned a couple of weeks ago, State of the State, he was this guy.
Optimism is contagious. Make a difference.
That was his happy face for everybody. And I don't know what happened. He seems to have changed his tune.
All right, good afternoon, everybody.
That was the beginning of his press conference yesterday.
All right, good afternoon, everybody.
All right, good afternoon, everybody.
That's Jolly Ned. Optimism is contagious. Well, pessimism, depression, failure, also contagious. Yes, they are. There's an automatic assumption that people who are in positions of power, holding power, that they must know something about what they're doing, that somewhere... Don't you think this way about the world, that somewhere there's competent people? You know, you might look around your workplace and say, oh, they're so incompetent. There's so many people just mailing it in. There's so many people just pretending to work. Whereas I just have to work to advance myself so I can get to the point where I'm working in an organization where everybody's smart, they're experienced, they're well-trained, they know what they're doing. But there's no reason at all to think you would encounter that world in the world of government. Because where is the incentive to be competent? And where is the filter in an electoral system, right? People running for office. What is the filter that's going to test whether they're competent? Or I mean, look at Jolly Ned. Obviously, the guy's never done anything in his life, isn't capable of doing anything, isn't capable of leading anything. He went on a rampage yesterday where he just criticized all the people he works with, who he depends on. If he's going to do anything, he depends on the people he's criticizing. So what would be the logic for him to go out and have a press conference where he's just mean to all the people he works with?
Misled in the sense that I thought...
He depends on them, and he trashes them.
Misled in the sense that I thought they were going to vote. I thought they're...
Oh, he was asked if he was misled, if he felt misled by the legislative leaders. They were, you know, they're poking around trying to figure out why he's so angry.
Misled in the sense that I thought they were going to vote. I thought they were going to vote on Thursday. We had a handshake and agreement on that. And obviously a 30-hour filibuster was somewhat upsetting to some of the members. And they have a hard time getting the members there for 30 hours. I mean, how does that help? Throwing, you know, sand into the gears. That's all that Republican filibuster is all about.
So apparently they had a little briefing before they came out, and they all agreed that the thing they were going to be upset about was that there was Republican opposition to the tolls. Like, it took them 2 years to figure out that Republicans would be opposed to tolls. And they want to blame shift. Of course, they don't want to have to blame themselves for their own failure to pass their own measure. That makes you look kind of dumb. So they're trying to shift it onto the Republicans. But of course, everything else that Lamont says undermines that messaging. But he does get it out.
Come forward with your own plan. That's why you have a Republican Party. Come up with some constructive alternative. Just don't say no.
So he's mad at them because they were going to filibuster. They said they would filibuster. But this is standard procedure. Filibustering. It's how it goes. It's one of the few tools that the minority has to hold the majority accountable.
They were, in fairness to them, that was a reaction in large measure to this extraordinary plan that the Democratic majority was proposing. The idea of first somehow doing synchronized debates, and then the more recent one is the idea of splitting the bill in two, so both chambers would have to go on the record at roughly the same time. What did you think of those kind of gymnastics to get this thing to the finish line?
I thought it was a little weird.
He thought it was a little weird. He's a little weird. And he's certainly not prepared to be a governor. So I just wanted to make the point that we have a tendency to assume that people in positions of authority have some idea what they're doing. That they have experience, they have maturity. That's one of the big things. Somewhere there must be mature people running organizations, we might say to ourselves, leaving our workplace. We might say, why do I have to work with so many people who don't want to put any effort into what they do? And then you would look out and you see all these fancy people walking around in their nice suits and their fake suntans and their sunglasses in the middle of winter, you know? And their hair perfectly dolled up. And you'd say, those people must be working at one of those places where everybody knows what they're doing. But I don't know if there is such a place. I don't know where people are competent, but it sure isn't in Hartford. It sure isn't at the state capitol. And if you listen to what Ned had to say in his press conference yesterday, his announcement of failure, what you hear is somebody who's petulant, who's immature, who has no idea how to lead and inspire, doesn't know how to seize the moment to make something good happen out of whatever it is. You know, there's a rule of thumb in politics. You ever notice when somebody loses an election and they run right up to the stage and jump up there at the earliest possible hour so they can get the largest TV audience possible as they give their concession speech? And they don't say anything sad if they're smart. They don't lament what somebody did to them. They don't show anger or whatever. They give an inspiring speech. because that speech they're giving on their defeat night is the first speech of their next campaign. It is their first opportunity to reset. The goal at that point is to have everybody waking up the next day saying, geez, isn't that too bad? Jolly Ned, he's such a good guy. Why did he lose? That's what you're supposed to do. It's not supposed to be everybody waking up saying, geez, how about Jolly Ned? Not so jolly now. Not so optimistic now, eh, Ned?
Optimism is contagious. Optimism is contagious. Make a difference.
So that's, you know, that's government. A lot of ordinary people who aspire to be in positions of power and influence, to be centers of attention. It doesn't mean they're good. It just means they've conformed to the requirements of getting themselves into that position of power so that they can have that power and satisfy their egos. And that's what happened with the governorship. You know, the guy's got a lot of money. He bought some ads, rented a car, or an American car he could drive around in and pretend that's what he was going to be like as governor. And the real evaluation that has to go on, I think, is a good opportunity to go on, is to consider why you watch a TV commercial and ever want to buy the product, especially when the product is a person trying to get you to give them a job where you're going to trust them with money. Just a thought. All right, so there's a lot going on. There's a big night last night. Vaccination, well, yesterday went overnight, I guess. I haven't really caught up on it. So I'd like to hear from some people who can fill me in on exactly where we're at with what happened yesterday. 860-522-9842. Quick break. We'll do that coming up on WT.
All right, good afternoon, everybody.
I see. A rube is a boob, a boob, a rube. No state can be led by a fool, you tool, unless the state meets this fate with a feckless Jolly Ned. Go right to the marble and ask the guy. You'll find his answer contains a lie. His door's always open, but no one's by. Talk to Jolly Ned. Talk is cheap, Ned's rich with words that clog and block the way. But Jolly Ned will never speak unless he has nothing to say. You can't push a square into a round, but Ned's chasing spending that isn't sound. He's looking for love he's never found. He's looking for love that won't be found. He is Jolly Ned. What are you doing playing that again, Mike? That was yesterday's song. Boy, oh boy. I thought there was going to be a mountain of requests to play it again today. But so far, I think there's only been one. And that was enough to get Mike going. At least Mike likes it.
I spent 4 weeks of taking the attention of the legislature to try to come up with a scenario, a date to move forward with this plan. At some point in time, you just have to move on.
Can you understand that? That's the Speaker of the Tolls, Joe Arisimowitz, talking about how he spent 4 weeks trying to round up people to do a vote in the House, and he just couldn't make it happen. At some point, he says, you just have to move on.
Come up with another plan. I couldn't continue to put the entire General Assembly on hold while we tried to figure out how the scenario is going to work out and what the date was going to be done on. So
it's really fascinating, isn't it, that these guys, you can see them not talking to each other, not understanding each other, not communicating properly. It's quite intriguing. Everyone always says, I wish I could be a fly on the wall. Well, how about being a fly on the wall while these guys, so you can see how inept they are and understand their failure? Why is it that... Is it because, like, the governor's got a big ego about being governor, so the other guys are trying to, you know, not bother him, and so they don't say what they really need to say? Or is it just that that's how they treat the governor because the governor's a big shot? I find all that stuff fascinating. Okay, Aaron calling from New Hartford. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, am I on? I'm sorry, I'm on
yes.
the phone again.
Yeah, go right. What do you want, a speaker?
I'm calling. I attended the public hearing.
Are you, Aaron, are you on a speakerphone?
Unfortunately, I am. I'm on the road right now.
If you can pull off of that, I'll leave you on the air, but I'll come back to you in a sec. There's all kinds of horrible noise. I'm sorry. Hi, Sean.
All right, Todd, I got a couple more updates for you. The Hartford Courant put out an article this morning about this, and I think it really shows the bias. The headline is, quote, anti-vaccine parents pull all-nighter in protesting vaccination bill. They've since corrected it since this morning because I wrote them complaining that they said anti-vaccine moms. And obviously, I'm a male. I was there, and so were many others. And it was, I mean, it's really insulting. And this is the real problem in this to me. I am not anti-vaccine. I have not researched it nor understand it. But when I see bias like this from the Courant, and when I see people passing out masks, of which I've seen photos of it being done, where people were wearing masks yesterday, like these unvaccinated people are a danger.
Well, wait a sec. Why were you there if you're not against the vaccines?
I'm against the fact that government would try to do something like this to mandate vaccines. I mean, that's scary to me. As I've been saying on my Facebook page, let's make Orwell fiction again. And it concerns me that the government thinks they're going to just you're going to inject something in someone's kid or me. That's too scary for me. And I've talked to these folks. You've had them as guests. And they're reasonable to me. And then I listen to people who are supporting this, and all they do is call me stupid. So, you know, I've been around the block enough. My spidey senses are up. Mm-hmm. And then I see this Courant bill. We're not anti-vaccine. We're against mandatory vaccines. And if they took 5 seconds to even talk to people about this, they would understand the difference. I have friends who I've known for a long time. We're on Facebook, and they support vaccines, and they oppose mandatory vaccines because it's taking government to a different place. And there were people there that are very religious. I'm not sure if there's aborted fetus cells in vaccines, but some people believe there are, and we should talk about it. And that's why we call your show. And it's just mind-blowing to me that the arrogance of this and the way they talk to people, the thing, and you just get some very basic information. Like, there's no measles problems, like we talked about when I called yesterday. Mm-hmm. There's no measles outbreak. And then the Courant is posting an article saying that there's an outbreak in Connecticut. And I'm looking at this like the paper can't even get this right. This is crazy.
Well, it is a very emotional issue, which has everyone charged up on every side, on both sides. It's interesting how intense that is. Sean, thank you for the phone call. But there are a lot of different elements to it, especially the religious liberty one. But I think it touches a deeper nerve, too, and that is the idea that parents feel they should be able to make decisions about the best interests of their kids. 860-522-9842. Aaron, I'll give you another try after our news update. We've just got to get to news right now. I'm sorry about that. Give us a call if you want to talk tolls, Ned, or vaccines. News time on WTIC. WTIC.
Right now, the Senate Democrats were worried that with 30 hours of filibuster, they may not be able to get their people together. Maybe we'd have to wait another week. Maybe we'd have to wait a few more weeks. I think it's time to take a pause. If these guys aren't willing to vote and step up, I'm going to solve this problem. And right now, we're going to go back to the way we've done it for years in this state when we just kept kicking the can down the road. We both agree, Republicans and Democrats, we need not.
So the governor says he's content to do business the way it's always been done. He was on a debt diet, he pretended. But, you know, like most diets, it wasn't working out. But now he's going to blame all that on the failure to have tolls. But all he's got to bond is a couple $100 million, which is, you know, that's chump change in their world. He just doesn't like losing, I guess. Sounds all bent out of shape about that. Kevin calling from Tolland. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Todd. I just wanted to give Pat Sasser a shout out and your radio station and your show. You know, he did something much more than defeat this toll bill. He woke us up. And, you know, last session, my rep made a big mistake in Tolland. Her name's Pat Wilson-Phineas. She called me from her cell phone. I text her every single day. And
she called you on purpose or by accident?
Well, I think she called me on purpose, but I don't think she realized who she was calling.
Okay.
You know, I love this state. I've lived here my whole life. My family's here. And I don't badmouth the state. I badmouth this leadership. Now, beating tolls, I think, was the easy job. We got to flip this state. And the work has to continue, and I'll keep the pressure on her.
I'm sorry, what did you say? What did you say you have to do to the state?
Excuse me?
What did you say you have to do to the state?
Oh, we have to flip this state. We, you know, this battle was the small battle. You know, we have to win the House and the Senate, put pressure on this governor, and elect a new governor, you know, as soon as we can in 3 years.
Yes, but I see this as part of a progress. So the beautiful thing about the tolls and the stupidity of the Democrats in pursuing them so relentlessly and with their standard arrogance and the utter wall of silence and invisibility they create. You know, there is no transparency at all. They just try to force you. What I think everybody can see is that they are the enemy and they're trying to force things onto the state that nobody wants. And they're indignant that they don't get passed. Go ahead, Ken. Kevin.
I see that in my rep every single day. I asked her what her position was and she would never give one. And, you know, that battle over who was going to vote first, she falls right into that. She never committed to a vote, so, you know, she would consider herself to be safe.
Yeah, that's what they do. I'm so glad you described that and you got to witness it. They are these little weasels who go around trying to make sure nobody knows what they're committed to and what they're likely to vote for.
Well, you know, I've never been active before, but I'll tell you what, I'll be knocking on doors, and I've already committed to helping her opponent on Facebook yesterday, so... I'll be right in Pat's neighborhood, and she won't like it.
That's awesome, Kevin. Thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for the call. It's great to be an active citizen. It is. Aaron, New Hartford. Sorry about that.
Hi, can you hear me better now?
Yeah, sounds a lot better.
Okay, excellent. I'm pulled off to the side of the road. Well, you just said that the legislature wants to force things on the state that nobody wants. I'm just calling because I was at the public hearing yesterday for the bill 5044 on the eliminating the religious exemption for vaccines. And just to let you know, I have a friend who is a high ranking official at the state capitol police. His estimate that there were 2,600 people there that were there for that particular bill.
That's awesome.
And my wife testified. She was number 166 on a list of 600 people that had signed up to give testimony. She testified at 2:30 in the morning. We did not get home till very late, so obviously I'm a little tired. The vast majority, I would say easily, I mean, only one out of probably 15 or 20 people that actually testified in the testimony that I heard were in favor of the bill to eliminate the exemptions.
And what's the driving force for most people? What is the element of this that motivates them to be so active?
There were a lot of different reasons for people to be there. There were
what do you think the main driver of it is?
There really isn't a single main driver. A lot of the people there that were moms and parents that have children that they believe were vaccine injured. I don't have anything conclusive to agree with that, but we have a child that we believe was vaccine injured. A lot of emotional testimony about that. And when you listen to it all, there were a lot of similarities to all of their testimony. The one thing that stood out to me the most was that when they finally figured out and started to question the fact their child might be vaccine injured, they could not get an answer. They got the runaround. People, their pediatricians, the people that they trusted to tell them what the problem was, couldn't give them an answer, wouldn't give them an answer, would not help them. And there was a lot of that. There were a lot of people, a lot of different denominations, Orthodox, Jews, Catholics, basically stating their opposition based on the religious aspect, because we've heard a lot of people in the legislature stating that people are using the religious exemption that aren't really religious and that no denomination actually opposes it, but they gave very compelling testimony, and all of the testimony on the opposing side was very compelling, as opposed to, I mean, there was some good testimony on the side.
All right, so Aaron, how do you feel like it worked out from your perspective? You wanted to go there to make a point. Do you feel like you did? Do you feel like you're hurt?
I was there to support my wife, who was testifying, and in retrospect, I really wish that I had prepared testimony myself and testified myself.
Mm-hmm.
And this bill comes up to an actual vote, and I'm given the opportunity, I probably will testify at that point. But there were a lot of people on the Public Health Committee that were open, and I believe that the people that were there swayed a lot of people. But if you looked at the expressions on some of the people that were there faced that are really pushing for this bill, and actually the two main proponents of this bill who are not on the Public Health Committee, Ritter and Linehan, both of whom have conflicts of interest when it comes to this issue, did not provide testimony as far as I saw. And like I said, we were there for over 18 hours. We saw a lot of testimony. The two people that are basically the primary authors of this bill, they were not present, nor did they provide any, at least granted there were times when I was not in the room or, you know, in one of the overflow rooms. They had a bunch of overflow rooms. They did not have room for all the people that were there at the hearing.
All right, Aaron. Well, thank you for filling us in on it.
Okay. I would encourage people to go and actually look at some of the public testimony. It's available online. Again, it was very compelling. The people that were advocating against this bill were extremely well-spoken. They were well-researched. They were not the nut jobs as they are portrayed to be. I would encourage anybody who is a thinking person to go and actually, you know, review the written testimony that's available online.
Aaron, thank you so much. 860-522-9842. Hearing yesterday at the state capitol on vaccines. The thing that gets me about the vaccines is that our government is supposed to protect us from government overreach. Our government is supposed to, in other words, protect our rights. And instead, they make up reasons why they're just on the other side of that. They don't even pay lip service to the idea that their job is to protect our liberties. That's what bothers me. Douglas, hi, you're on WTIC.
Hi, Mark. Listen, you're doing a great job. I don't want to be a broken record. I was up. I called last week. We're not focused. Now that we got the tolls abolished for momentarily, the focus is going to be on budget cuts. Budget cuts, including layoffs, if possible. In 2009, I had to take a 4% cut in my pay because of the decline of the economy. So every department in the state of Connecticut should be told, a memorandum should be told to every boss, listen, 3% across
the board. Yeah, but Doug, who would do this?
Pardon me?
Who would do the thing that you want done?
The governor.
The governor? Why would the governor do that? The governor wants it going in the other direction.
No. We have to, a lot of people aren't, callers, in my opinion, too, aren't focusing in on that. You budget cuts. We have
but
to.
But the governor will never, he's a Democrat. Democrats will never cut a budget.
Well, didn't Governor Malloy a few years back trim the employment?
You mean the CBAC agreement?
They make
deals on things. It's like if you invest in the stock market and over 6 months your stock goes up 30 points, but there are days where it goes down.
Yes,
you know, they might have those days, but they're always increasing the size of government. They're always increasing spending.
But yes, you're totally right, Todd. The bottom line, though, in my opinion, I'll hang up. And again, anybody out there who's listening, you got to focus. Keep talking. Budget cuts, 3%. Last week or 2 weeks ago, there was a caller who said 2% should be, we should have budget cuts. 2% is not good. It's 3%.
Well, why not go for 5? I mean, they're not going to do any of it. So I appreciate the sentiment. But the first step, Douglas, is to mobilize for the elections coming up in just a few months and make sure some changes are made so that the legislature, the Democrats in the legislature, don't have the dominant control that they picked up a year ago. And once it gets back into some kind of balance, even just that tie that was in the Senate again would make a dramatically different situation. But there might be a chance to actually take control of one or both of those chambers. And that spirit and that energy will be driven with its ignition, I think, of that drive coming from this toll debate. 860-522-9842. Jeff, hang on. We'll get to your call next when we continue on WTIC. Oh, yes. WTIC is where you are tuned, and rightly so. So much going on in the world. We are talking about the governor yesterday, the toll victory. Everybody, the message on toll seems to be beware, they will strike again. And of course they will. But that doesn't mean we can't enjoy the victory lap. It doesn't mean we cannot enjoy this victory. Because you can't say we're not going to celebrate until this is over, because it'll never be over. The plunderers will always be trying to plunder. Won't they? 860-522-9842. Jeff calling from Middletown. Hi, Jeff.
Over there.
Yes, sir.
I had a quick question. I didn't read any of the testimony. Just wondering what exact injuries or damages are these folks alleging that vaccines are causing?
On the part of the people resisting vaccines, I think on a basic level don't like being told by the state that they have to vaccinate their own babies and kids. And they don't like being the idea that they would be blocked from their kids going to school or even going to private school. And I think there's all kinds of concerns. It depends on what the vaccine is. You know, certain vaccines are apparently have certain side effects. There's controversy about that. But this bill would take away a religious exemption. And that religious exemption allows parents who have a conscientious objection to their kids being vaccinated, somehow linked to their religion, they've always been able to exercise that right. And so the real question is, what is it that's so dangerous? What is the evidence of hazard that is provoking people to want to remove these exemptions, to cut down on parental rights with regard to the medical treatment of their own children?
There's a study done a long time ago, and they were linking autism to vaccines. But since then, both the Journal of American Medicine and Britain's The Lancet have since debunked the study, saying that it was basically very flawed. I was just curious, what is the fear? I can understand some.
Yeah, I think there is still some fear of that, although some people say that's not such a big deal. But there are a lot of different vaccines now. And there are a lot of different arguments based on which vaccine it is. So I'm not that well versed on it. And the part that concerns me the most is the zeal and the blind zeal, I guess is the way I should describe it, of people who just want to infringe on parental rights without really much regard, not even paying lip service to those rights. Our government is supposed to be a small government that doesn't interfere with us pursuing our own happiness and that for our families. So to me, the knee-jerk response of everybody should be, what is it? I want to see the compelling state interests. Like, where are the dying people that require us to have every child vaccinated? That should be the knee-jerk response, because this is the government wanting to take away a right. Does that make sense to you?
No, that I get. I was just curious what the actual physical effects of this
yes.
afraid of.
Yes, you said that, and I told you that there's a range of them because there's lots of different vaccines now. And I don't know that the preservatives are the big thing right now. But there are people with every different kind of opinion. So the liberty argument has no impact on you.
No, I don't like the government telling me what I can and can't do either. Like I said, I'm not even looking at this from a liberties standpoint. I was just honestly curious if, other than liberty, these folks had a point.
Oh, they do have. No, they have all kinds of points. Yes, extensive, intense, heartfelt, well-researched arguments. Yeah, we had Bobby Kennedy Jr. on a couple of months ago because he's a big he's a big proponent of stopping the government from infringing on parental rights, and he's got people who've been injured by these vaccines, he says, who he represents as a lawyer. So it's a big, complicated issue. It can't be boiled down to one simple thing in terms of what it is that worries parents about vaccines. But there are, keep this in mind, it's not one or two vaccines anymore. It's lots of vaccines. And it might be that some anti-vaxxers like some of the vaccines and don't like others. It might be that there are anti-vaxxers who say fine to the original whatever, three, six, but not to the hundreds of others that have followed. I'm exaggerating. I don't know what the number is. But there's a ton of them now. I remember going with my one of my grandchildren several years ago and just being stunned at the idea that this precious little child, this newborn, beautiful, perfect creature, one of the first things that the medical profession does to it is start zapping it with all these things that aren't necessarily dangerous, but could be. And it's the job of a parent to protect a child. So there should be some compelling story that we can look to. Like, where are the people whose lives are being harmed by these diseases? Where are these diseases that we're vaccinating against? Why is it so dangerous for the people who don't take the vaccine? They would be putting themselves at risk, we would think, wouldn't we?